The show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
That's right, here we go again. We are back with you all huddled up. We're ready to run the first play. It's kickoff time here on the program. It's another edition of Bucket Strategy Investing. We've got more of the best in money information coming up for you today. And the Brain Trust here in the form of Professor Rick Plum, who joins me, Johnny Dean, once again from Lucia Capital Group, ready to talk to you about your money. We're going to start it all off with a discussion on some reasons why you might consider converting your traditional IRA to a Roth IRA. You may even be saying, what is a Roth IRA? You've heard us talk about it on this show. We'll let you know in case you don't know, but you may have heard about the benefits that come with a Roth, and you may also be approaching what's known as required minimum distribution age, 70 and a half. And approaching, I mean, it could be 3-4 years away still for you, or more, 5-10 years away. But have you thought about the fact that you could be pushed into a higher tax bracket simply because of your required minimum distributions? This is potentially true for many people. Now, one way, maybe, to alleviate that problem could be to do Roth conversions. And we're going to tell you what you need to know all about that coming up in just a couple of moments for you. And here's some more good news. How about this? You can give us a call right now with your money question. Any question at all. Doesn't matter what it is. Phone lines are open, 877-PLANNER. Make it of a financial nature. I would appreciate that. 877-752-6637. That spells out PLANNER. You can also head over to wealthed.com. You can send us an email or two or three, however many suits you. You click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. Either way, you're going to reach the Brain Trust, and you'll get your money questions answered, courtesy of Professor Plum. We do say hello to Professor Plum from Lucia Capital Group. We're bringing it back into the hot seat. How about this? You need a strategy. You need one that addresses each of your needs. You heard me say that before? Sure. You need one that aims to make sure your retirement goals are covered right the first time, potentially. Call our advisory team at Lucia Capital Group. The phone number, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. What you need is a bucket strategy, and the Brain Trust advisors will put one together for you. You can talk to any of them, including Professor Plum, about your financial future, and maybe, give yourself some peace of mind. Again, off the air, 800-644-1150. Mark it down. On the air, you should know this by now, but if not, put it in your head, 877-PLANNER. You can reach us right here in the studio. Lines are open right now, 877-752-6637. So we get a lot of people asking us about doing a Roth conversion. This is on a lot of people's minds, Professor Plum. Now,
well, it's because a lot of times you're reading different financial journalist areas and they say, a Roth conversion is the greatest thing in the world and you should do 100% of your money into a Roth. Maybe not. Is
no.
It always advisable? Not always. Is it always a good thing? No, not always. Sometimes it's a very, very good thing. Sometimes it's not.
So let's just, going back to basics for a quick 30 seconds, a Roth IRA is almost like
the opposite
of a traditional IRA, right?
One is, well, they are both tax-deferred investments, they're not investments.
Yeah.
They are tax-deferred accounts. The investment underneath of it you don't have to pay any taxes while it hopefully is growing. You also don't get to take any losses if it goes down. So the growth portion, the time period that you have it, is basically the same. There's no taxes due. The difference is tax-free distributions in retirement from a Roth IRA, taxable distributions from a traditional IRA. Now, if all you did was look at the distributions, tax-free, taxable, well, hello, tax-free is always better than taxable, right? Not necessarily. It depends on what it costs to get the money into the Roth IRA. Because the money that goes into a traditional IRA, 401k, tax-deferred accounts of that nature, is a pre-tax contribution for the most part. And so we're looking at, we're saving money, putting money into a 401k, into an IRA, where we don't get that savings in the Roth IRA. And then later on, we have to recoup that savings when we take it out of a traditional IRA, where it's tax-free out of the Roth IRA. So we have to look at both sides of the equation. What did it cost to get the money into the Roth, and how much is it going to save me when it comes out of the Roth? And as long as that is in your favor, it didn't cost you as much to put it in as it's going to cost to take it out, Roth IRA, Roth conversion makes sense. But if it costs me more to put it in than it's worth, then it costs more than it's worth.
Yeah, so in a traditional IRA, you deduct
up front 100% of it. You write off 100% of it.
Usually.
If you put it that way. That's what I'm saying. In a traditional IRA, that's what you do. And then when you ultimately take money out of it, whatever money you take out, you wind up paying taxes on. Even the growth has to be taxed. Roth IRA, you put in post-tax money. On a contribution, you put the post-tax money in, you let it grow, and once you take it out, potentially, assuming that all the rules have been satisfied, you take it out tax-free. Okay, we'll talk more about this, especially on the conversion side. We will get to that. When should you do a conversion? Maybe now is a better time, maybe later. We'll talk about that. 877-PLANNER. We got some folks on hold, so we're going to take care of them right away. 877-752-6637. Any money question that you have. We'll start the hour with Don in Houston, Texas. Hello, Don.
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
My question was regarding Social Security.
Okay.
I'm required by law to retire at age 65. I'm 64 and a half now. My normal retirement age would be 66.
Right.
So I'm not planning on working between 65 when I retire and 66.
Okay.
Would my Social Security benefit be the same if I took Social Security at 65?
Not waiting
to 66.
It's going to be slightly less. It'll be about 6, almost 7% less if you take it at 65 than if you wait until 66. It is reduced if you take it under your full retirement age. You've identified your full retirement age as 66. It is, and so. If you were going to take it, you know, $2,000 a month at 66, it won't be $2,000 if you take it at 65. But you get a year's more income, even though it's a little less money. So let's talk about your situation. Are you single or married?
I'm married.
And is your benefit the higher of the two benefits or about the same as your spouse's?
No, my wife, she retired at age 62, and her benefit is about $1,500 a month. I calculated my benefit at age 66 mm-hmm. Would be about $2,600 a month.
Now let's talk about longevity. How long might either you or your spouse live?
Well, that's a really good question.
It's a tough question.
I would say middle 80s. Yes.
For both of you?
Yes, we're the same age.
Okay, you're same age now. So middle 80s, there's a marginal benefit for doing something where you don't do anything for 6 months or for a year. You don't take anything from 65 until 66. And then at 66, you do not take your own benefit. You take half of your spouse's benefit. And not half of what she's receiving, because she took a discount for taking it at 62. She's receiving $1,500 a month. But if she had waited until 66, her benefit would have been $2,000. That's the number that dictates how much you will get as a spousal benefit. So at 66, you start picking up $1,000 a month for the next 4 years. And then at age 70, you go in and apply for your age 70 benefit, which by that time will be close to $3,500 a month. This makes sense if one of you lives into your mid or early 80s. Probably 80 is about the break even on this one, because there's $1,000 a month coming in for those first 4 years. The second block of years. It does make some sense. So the question is, can you afford to go without any Social Security and then a limited Social Security over the next 1 and 4 year periods?
Okay. Yes, I think we can. She was also a teacher for 35 years, so she's drawing a benefit from the state.
But she also obviously paid into Social Security at the same time.
She did.
Yeah, so she's not one of the ones caught in the teacher trap that many states, including Texas,
with
impose on some of their teachers.
Right. No, she's not caught in that. So even though I don't take, even though I don't work between 65 and 66, though, my benefit will still go up.
Your benefit will go up. And if you wait until 66, I would do the spousal benefit, take the 1,000 instead of the 2,600. Yes, I'm giving up 1,600 a month. But then from 70 on, regardless of whether it's you or your wife, whoever lives, as long as they live, the benefit will be $3,500 or $3,400 a month from that point forward. A much bigger benefit for the rest of your life.
And eventually to catch up and surpass that, Don, but you would need to live, would you say 80,
about
81?
81.
Or one of you would need to live
that. One or the other of you needs to live to 80, 81, and it makes sense to do that. Give up some money now to gain a lot more money later on.
Okay, very good.
I mean,
if you figure it,
let's say it's roughly $3,500 that he'll get. They'll be getting $5,000 a month just from Social Security starting 5 years from now.
Yeah.
Now, Don, I don't know if you're still there. Make sure you sign up for Medicare at 65.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Make sure you sign up for your Medicare at 65.
I will.
Yeah, don't.
Okay,
don't,
thank you.
All right, Don,
thank you very much for your time.
You bet. Thank you for the call. Yeah, Medicare is important. If you're not taking Social Security, it's easy to overlook Medicare.
Yeah, because it's just one of those things. I mean, how many times do we really want to go deal with Social Security office? But Medicare is one of those things that at 65, he's not going to be working, so he's not going to have the exception for applying later where he won't have a penalty. So applying at 65 makes sense. Now, he's going to go through where at 65 he gets one Social Security number or Medicare number. 66, he'll get a different number because he's pulling a spousal benefit. And at 70, he'll go back to the original number.
Okay, well, there you go. Not that you necessarily have to memorize that stuff, but Don's in a good position, and he can
do what you
said because he's old enough.
Yes.
That's not available to
anybody that's not already 62.
Nope. So if you're listening saying, I thought they got rid of that. They did, but not for everybody. Okay, 877-PLANNER. More questions, more answers coming up. Lines open now. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, Buckett Strategy Investing. Oh, that's right.
Let me tell you how it will be.
We are right around that time. I got more stuff to say on taxes. In fact, between now and the due date of your return, we will be covering a little bit more in the world of taxes. We get a lot of tax questions, you know, prior to whenever the returns are due. And so we'll be talking more about that coming up in future programs. 877-PLANNER is our number, PLANNER. We'll also tell you more about some of these Roth conversions. I said I want to take the calls first, and that's what we do on this show. 877-752-6637. Whatever money question you have, Brain Trust is here, Professor Plum, answering those questions for you. Let's move along to Henry in San Jose, California. Hi, Henry.
Hello, how are you?
Very well. How are you doing?
Pretty good. I have two part of the question. The first part is how much in taxable income will benefit to contribute to the SEC IRA? And the second part is right now we flip houses and currently use our name as the buyer, and we profit about $100,000 a year in flipping houses.
Okay.
What is the better way to do it? Perhaps we should form the LLC. The goal is to save as much profit as possible for retirement.
How old are you, Henry?
35.
35, okay. How much, so you're making quite a bit of profit. So when you're flipping houses and you're doing them multiple times during the year, it is a business. That is your business. So the entire profit is not a capital gain. It's a business profit. And so the only way to really reduce it is to have some kind of retirement plan, tax-deductible retirement plan. And one of the things, so you would be looking at, for 2015, if you didn't already have anything else set up, the only type of retirement plan you can do at this point is a SEP, which is a business contribution to your individual retirement account. And how much can you put in? Well, that depends on how much you have net profit. So you've got all the proceeds from everything, all the income from the business. You get to reduce it by all of the expenses of the business, you know, whatever repairs you make, whatever issues you have, the marketing expense, the broker's expense, and things of that nature. So you come up with a net profit number, and the net profit number drives your net self-employment, drives how much you can put into the SEP. And it's just shy of 20%. As a self-employed individual, it's just shy of 20% of the net profit from your self-employment business. And so depending upon how much you make, if you make $100,000, it's just a little under $20,000. If you make $500,000, there is an upper cap of $53,000. So if you're making, you know, way over, there is a base, $265,000, that they won't count earnings in excess of that for making a contribution. Now, for 2016 going forward, if you're going to be making, you know, how much do you make on average each year from your business?
About 200.
At 200, and you're self-employed, the only way you're going to be maxed out at about $40,000, just under $40,000 of contributions. If your net income is $40,000, just shy of 20%, so you'd probably be at $38,000, $39,000. To get more in, you could do a 401k for you, assuming you don't have employees. And now you can get a combination of contributions. One is you as the employee, and one you as the employer. The employer can put in the 20% number, roughly, And the employee can put in up to $18,000 since you're 35 years old, as long as the combination of the two of them does not exceed the $53,000 number. So that's for somebody who's making under the limit, under the $265,000, combining a 401k with a profit sharing plan gets you up to or closer to that, and in your case would get you right back to that $53,000 number. That's a big tax savings if you can put $53,000 away. Now, this year you're only going to be able to get about $38,000 and $39,000 away.
Okay.
Does that make sense to you, Henry? Did you follow all that?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Yeah, there are other plans. If you had said you were 55, there are other plans that can help you put away a lot more. But for a 35-year-old, they don't make sense because the numbers are skewed to an older individual, not a younger individual, and you're still a younger individual.
So by doing this, I have to have a business name and everything in order to pitch at a company, right? Or I don't have to?
Well, you don't have to have a business entity. You can be a self-employed individual. There's no reason. I mean, the business entity side of it is for other reasons. You do a business entity to avoid liability or to limit liability from other areas. You do a business entity to avoid liability from employees if you have employees. You do a business entity in some respects to save on taxes, but by saving on taxes, you're also reducing the amount of income that you have. It doesn't necessarily reduce the total income you have. It just changes the character of it from total earnings, which is all subject to the self-employment tax, to partial earnings, partial profit. And that profit component is not subject to the self-employment tax. However, with you flipping houses, it would be very difficult to drive your salary portion of it down below $120,000 when you're making $200,000 and it's your business. And so you're really not going to save all that much in the FICA area, because you're over the wage base at 118.5, you're at 200. So the only reason you would look at this point, in my opinion, to look at business entities are liability. And if you believe that you can shelter your liability, then yes, you would do some form of a business entity, either an LLC or an S-Corp. And that's something you could talk to an attorney or your accountant about, or we can talk further off the air about how you're going to set it up. Do you have any employees?
No, we do not. My wife and I.
Yeah, so it is, I don't know how much there is. I mean, you've got workers coming in and doing work on the property. So I would want to have a business entity around me.
For liability
for
reasons.
Liability protections. Now the question is, do you do an LLC or an S-Corp? And I would probably, now do either of you have other jobs?
No, we do not. I do a real estate, basically. So I just out with the construction, selling, fixing, and all that stuff.
Right, so you do real estate, but then when you find a really, really good deal, you buy it yourself and flip it.
Yeah.
It's good work if you can find it, right? So you now, are you an employee of a firm, or are you treated as an independent contractor for your real estate sales?
Oh, I'm a real estate broker, so I treated myself as,
okay.
My wife hiring me to do this stuff for her, like solicit or sell it.
Okay. So you've got two businesses. You've got your real estate business and you've got the real estate flippage, side of it. I would try to keep them separate and so run one of them. And so this is where you're going to want to talk in more depth to somebody about how to set up the different business entities.
Okay.
But it also means I would probably want to run my LLC side, the flipping side, as an LLC to avoid incurring additional self-employment tax. I would not want to do an S-Corp. For the flipping side, I would do an LLC.
Yeah. Hey, Henry, if you can hang on a second, Professor Plum can go over with you in a lot more detail because I think you probably could use a little help in this if you don't mind. So hold on a second, and we'll get your information. We've got to take a break here in just a second anyway. If you have other questions, please hold on, and we can talk to you on the other side of it. Planning opportunities for Henry. This is just what he does for a living. He's not incorporated.
But he's got two different sides of his business life. One of them is a traditional real estate broker buying and selling for other people.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is
flipping the house.
Buying a house and flipping a house on his own accord. And I would keep those two as a separate issues. I would try to separate the two businesses.
Mainly because?
Just liability issues. Just because it's easier to account for. I just like things
so
clean.
So if something happens on one side,
doesn't necessarily affect the other.
Although
he's the only person doing the work, but on the flippage side, he's got other employees.
Well, that's what I was saying. Yeah. So if it's
not
on
employees,
the,
other people working for him.
Contractors. I would assume.
Yes.
Okay. 877 Planner. A whole lot more to come. We still have a couple of lines open. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. You've seen how the Brain Trust works. We answer your questions. You give us a call. We're coming right back.
answering your money questions right here on the program, as we do every day and have for many, many, many years now, helping you out as best we can. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. And website, Wealth, WEALTH, wealthed.com. If you want to send us an email, we just got a couple emails on Roths that we're going to get to here in just a little a bit, a couple of moments or two. But we're going to take your calls first. Also want to remind you that speaking of wealthed.com, if you go there, you can find out where the Brain Trust is going to be hanging out. I'll tell you, for the next, you know, I don't know, 3-4 weeks, you can meet the Brain Trust first in Las Vegas. That's on Saturday, February 20th, right around the corner. Saturday morning, February 20th at the Renaissance Hotel in Las Vegas. Join the Brain Trust. Meet them, Professor Plum, Terry Keyes, and the local advisors. Get your money questions answered and learn all about retirement income strategies. That's what these Lucia Capital Group workshops are all about, retirement income strategies. You don't want to run out of money before you run out of time. Going to give you some ways to potentially avoid that. That'll be Saturday, February 20th in Las Vegas. Seattle, Washington happens the week after that, February 27th, and Phoenix, Arizona, March 12th. So you got those three, Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix. More to come. As I said, check out wealthed.com. Get all the details there. Sign up there. Oh, did I tell you? Yeah, it's all free, of course. Valuable advice given away for free. That's courtesy of Professor Plum and Lucia Capital Group. WealthEd.com. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Before we get to some of these emails, I know that Henry, we had talked to before the break. He just had another couple of questions, so we're going to bring Henry back very quickly and see if we can get those questions finished. Henry, you still there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, yeah. Now, I know you had a couple more questions here, so go right ahead.
You were saying that I can be the employer and also the employee, so I contribute more for my IRA.
On a 401k?
Yeah, 401k. Can you explain for me that a little bit? How do I do that?
Well, with a 401k, there's two ways to get money into a plan. There is the company that can contribute, which is known as a profit-sharing contribution. You don't even have to actually have profit to do it. But and then you've got the employee contribution. The employee, since the employee in this case is under the age of 50, can put in up to $18,000 of their income. The employer can put in roughly 20% of the employee of the income. So the combination of the two of them, you can sometimes get quite a bit of money into a retirement plan, more than what you can do on a SEP. Now, the combination of the two types of contributions, the employer and the employee, when they combine the amount of money that's going into the plan, that cannot exceed $53,000. So you've got two sets of limits. You've got the individual limits and then the combined limit. So for somebody who only makes $100,000, they're going to be constrained by the individual limits. For somebody who's making $200,000 like yourself, between the combination of the two of them, they can only put in the combined limit of $53,000. But it does work. Now, a SEP is the company contribution. So it's only that one side. And because you didn't have this done before the end of last year, the SEP is basically the only thing you have left to do for 2015. So that's that 20%-ish number. It's not exactly 20. It's a little under 20. But you could put away maybe $38,000, $39,000 of your $200,000 profit into a SEP. Next year, this year, 2016, going forward, you'll be able to potentially put more.
Okay. And I have to form the company somehow.
Well, you're filing. No, you're doing what you're already doing. You're filing as a self-employed individual right now. You have a company. It's just not incorporated, or it doesn't have a liability protection around it like a limited liability company. So you are a self-employed individual. That is a business. You are a business. You're a self-employed business. And as a self-employed business, you have these different limits. You didn't know it, but you are actually two different things. You're the owner of the business, and you're the worker in the business. Business has one set of contributions. You, the worker, has another set of contributions. And so how are we going to make this work for you, for your advantage? For 2015, the SEP is the only thing that's going to work for you. For 2016, a 401k, which incorporates both sides of the contribution limits, can get you more money into this. Now, if you make $300,000 or $400,000 in 2016, 401k is not going to do you any more than a SEP will already be able to do for you. So we do have to kind of project, and you don't have to do the paperwork right away to get the SEP or the 401k done. You can wait a little while to see what your year is going to turn into, because the SEP is obviously a lot easier than doing a 401k. One's a full qualified plan. One is almost an afterthought. You do it after the fact, and you put up to 20% away.
And I'm thinking next year we might make a little bit more. So what's the limit to what's the income limit to contribute to 401k?
Well, as a solo employer, if you're in the 250 to 260 range or higher of net profit, then you wouldn't bother with the 401k because you can get just as much into a profit sharing plan or a SEP. There's no reason to have the added complexity of the employee side of it when you can get 100% of the limit into it from the company side.
Yeah. Hey, listen, Henry, I tell you what, I got to get some other questions here. But once again, if you want to hang on, we can get your phone number and talk to you in more detail about ways to plan for this kind of stuff. So if you can, hang on and we'll answer those questions because I do have to get to some other topics, emails and all that stuff. But suffice to say, Professor Plum, he is in a position where he's got to avoid some liability.
And, I think he should.
Yeah. But at the same time, now, because he's self-employed, he's also employer and employee.
Right. And if he does an LLC, he's going to be a single member LLC. He's going to be the only owner of the LLC. So it's still going to be taxed and still be treated exactly the same way as if he doesn't do an LLC. It just adds a little more protection.
Yeah, in that case, it does.
Assuming he runs it correctly.
Well, that's the other thing. And you have to understand that any work that you do as a self-employed individual, you are responsible for that LLC or no, S-Corp or no.
But also to get the coverage of the LLC, the contracts that he signs with his independent contractors, with the people that are doing the electrical work, he doesn't just sign it as him personally. He signs it as president of the LLC. The LLC is the one in contract with the subcontractors, not him personally.
Yeah, that's how these things work. Again, they're kind of complicated in some respects, but if you're...
They're not overly, but they're just another layer of complexity, but they can help save your bacon in the event of something
bad
happening.
And usually advisors and people who work around these things, I know tax attorneys often who set these things up, they have seen all kinds of problems that people have that you may not be aware of as a self-employed individual. It may not occur to you, although maybe in the back of your mind, that if you have somebody working for you on your behalf, whether it's an employee or somebody that you've subcontracted out, that there's some liability in there and you got to protect yourself.
Your business is liable for the work they did.
You
if
personally.
You have a business entity wrapping around it, you can shelter your personal side of the effects from that. If you don't have a business entity wrapped around you as a business, then you are liable for what they did, meaning everything you own is liable for what they did. So that's why you want, when you have subcontractors, especially in situations like people doing electrical work and other things that could potentially hurt somebody.
Oh, just about anything. You put me in charge of any of your projects, I don't care if it's nailing drywall or whatever, there's a potential for an explosion. I just want to tell you that.
Yeah, but if you're nailing drywall, the only person you're going to hurt is you.
You'd be surprised what kind of damage I can do with a simple hammer and nail. Okay, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. I have some more stuff to get to on Roth conversions. We were talking about those earlier and Roth IRAs, how they worked as opposed to traditional IRAs. So I wanted to get to Cynthia's email in New Jersey, who was asking a question similar to what we were talking about. So I'll put her ahead of the others. My question is with regard to Roths and traditional IRA distributions. At my full retirement age, I plan to stop working and suspend my Social Security to age 70. At my full retirement age, I also plan to take IRA distributions to lower my future RMD requirements, okay? Can these IRA distributions be placed into a Roth if I am no longer working? Thank you, and I love your show. That's Cynthia in New Jersey.
Well, Cynthia, at any time, up until you get to your required minimum distribution age, any distribution from a Roth IRA can be put into, any distribution from a traditional IRA can be put into a Roth IRA. And so we just have to make sure it'd be easier just to transfer it across. It does create it. That's a conversion. So you can convert any amount of money from your traditional IRA to a Roth IRA at any time until you get to the required minimum distribution age. Now, once you're at the required minimum distribution age, it doesn't mean you can't do conversions. It just means that there is a required minimum distribution
first,
and that required minimum distribution cannot be converted. So you have to take that out, set it off the side, pay tax on it like any other required minimum distribution. But then anything else over and above that, if you have room, you can take more money and convert it over to a Roth IRA as long as the required minimum distribution stays out. Now, once you get to 60, your full retirement age, unless you are going to hit your full retirement age by the end of April this year and suspend your benefit by April this year, there's not much benefit to suspending your benefit at full retirement age. You can't allow anybody else to draw a benefit from it. You can't, you know, change your mind and get a lump sum payment from it. You can suspend it, but there's no benefit in doing so unless you're going to be full retirement age before April, before the end of April.
Which would mean 66 or 67 if you happen to be born.
You got
to
be 66 before April of this year,
right,
to have the ability to do a file and suspend and get any benefit from it.
Yeah, so if you're not going to be full retirement age before the end of April.
Suspending's no big deal. Just wait till 70.
Just don't apply for it at all, and then you save the step of the hassle of having to go through the Social Security Administration. So she can do what she wants to do,
but
she
only
can't
if she's
do
April.
Yeah, all right, there you go. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Some room on the phones right now. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum here from Lucia Capital Group. If you want to talk on the air, it's 877-PLANNER. We got some lines open right now, 877-752-6637. We do have some room right now. If you want to email us, yes, you can. Comments, questions, concerns, wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealtheds.com, wealtheds.com. So we really didn't get a bunch into the Roth conversion stuff. I can tackle a little bit here with you, Professor Plum, and maybe we could talk more about it next hour. But when we say Roth conversions, we're talking about converting a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA. Okay, so I guess the question is, who should be considering doing that? And when is a good time to do it?
Well, there's several categories of people. One, people right now are looking at their accounts from, maybe last June, July timeframe, and they're saying, we're down quite a bit. Now, I think the market will recover, and it would really be nice to have that recovery in a tax-free environment rather than a taxable environment. And so some people will be looking at a downturn in the market as an opportunity to move some money from a traditional IRA type area, or if you have the ability in your 401k to go from a 401k traditional side to a Roth 401k, or from your traditional IRA to a Roth IRA. And so if you believe that you're down a lot and you think it's going to come back, now the problem with that right now is we don't know where the bottom is. And so a lot of people don't want to do the conversions until they know where the bottom is.
But you're not.
But the problem
know.
Is you never know where the bottom is.
Well, no, you will know, but you're going to know 10 months or a year later, and
too
that's
late.
The problem.
But a lot of people look at that. I mean, taking advantage of something that the market gives us, a negative opportunity, like, you know, negative time frame like we have today, may be a decent time to do some conversions. But traditionally, people look at it more from a tax standpoint, or they should look at it more from a tax standpoint. If I take the money out of the IRA today and I convert it to a Roth IRA, I have to pay taxes. So I have to withdraw or have the money. I won't be able to withdraw it from the IRA because that's a penalty event. But I have to be able to have the money to pay the taxes. So if what can I do with that money if I don't pay the taxes? Would that money be worth more than the taxes I will pay from the IRA when I take it out later on? Someone who's in a very high tax bracket today has to pay a large sum of money today in taxes to be able to make that work. Somebody who makes, you know, $200,000-$400,000, lives in a state like California, you know, they may have to pay 35-40% in taxes to move that money across. So if they did a $100,000 conversion, they have to come out of pocket, call it $35,000 in taxes between federal and state to make that conversion happen. Now, sure, the $100,000 that's in the Roth will grow, and it'll grow to, let's say it grows to $200,000 by the time they ultimately want to take the money out. And that $200,000 at that point, 5 years, age 59 and a half later, is tax-free. But what if I just left the money in the IRA? That $100,000 would grow to the same $200,000. It can be in the same exact investment. The difference is I have to pay taxes on the money that's coming out of the IRA, that $200,000 that's coming out of the IRA. But what if I go from a high tax situation, 35% or more, to a low tax situation in retirement? And instead of living in a super high income tax state like California, I move next door to Nevada and I don't pay any income taxes. And so I go to a 15% income tax bracket. Now, this is an extreme example, but we all have to look at these types of issues. So I pull that $200,000 out over a couple of years and I pay 15% on it. That's only $30,000 in taxes at that rate. So it cost me $40,000 to save $30,000. And that's not including what that $40,000 could have been invested at over that same time period where the IRA grew. Presumably the $40,000 would have grown too. So you have to not just look at the end result, you have to look at the cost involved in getting there and the opportunity cost of what you could have done with that tax money instead of sending it to Uncle Sam and Uncle whoever your state is, if you live in a state with a state income tax. So it's about cost and it's about opportunity, because you can have the same investments inside the IRA as inside the Roth IRA. The growth will be the same because you can have the exact same issues. The question is cost. What did it cost? What is my benefit?
See, I've heard it said, it's sort of what you're saying here. I've heard it said that, well, it's tax-free growth is always better.
That's because they only focus on the outcome.
But what
that $200,000 in the Roth IRA, if you take it out, you keep $200,000. That $200,000 in the traditional IRA, you have to pay taxes on it, so it's not really worth $200,000, is it? But they never talk about what you had to pay in taxes and what that would be worth at the same time.
Because you've got to pay taxes on all converted money. And by the way, that's at ordinary income rates.
Well, it's ordinary income, you know, whether you convert it or whether it comes out later on.
No, but I should mention that.
Yeah, it's not capital gains in either case. But it's all a matter of if I can find a way to do the conversion at a very low tax cost. Whether I have a very bad tax year, I have a lot of write-offs this year, whatever the case may be, if I lost my job and I'm without any, and I can do it for a very inexpensive tax cost compared to what it'll be when I take the money out later on, that is a great opportunity to do a Roth conversion. Who was our emailer, Cynthia? She's going to retire and not have any income except for a little bit here and there. She's not going to be taking her Social Security. And so she's going to try to use that opportunity between when she retires and when she has to take a required minimum distribution to utilize that low income tax bracket she'll be in at that point to do some Roth conversions. Makes sense at that point. So, and when I talk about the tax bracket in retirement, I was just making a hypothetical 15%. But depending upon where you are, it may not be 15% because it may have an impact on the Social Security that you have to pay tax on. So your tax bracket may be quite high in retirement, which means it may make sense to do that Roth conversion. That differential in the cost today versus the cost later starts coming back the other way, where even though it's high today, it's going to be high in the future. That makes sense. To get away from an excess required minimum distribution that you don't really need anyway, use the tax brackets to your advantage. Of course, that obviously means you need to know the tax brackets, at least the basics of them, to understand what is it costing me to do this? What is it costing me if I don't do this?
Yeah, so you say you could take it out of your traditional IRA, put it into a Roth, and allow it to grow tax-free, let's say, if you follow all the rules. But remember, you have to remember, there is a price to be paid to get it into that Roth IRA. I mean, there's a price of admission.
Oh,
that
yes.
Price of admission is the taxes. And if you're going to be if you're in a 28% or higher tax bracket right now, and by the time you take that money out, even if it grows tax free, you'd only be in, say, a 15% tax bracket. As you're saying,
I'm not real thrilled about doing it.
Probably doesn't make sense.
But it's not just my tax bracket that I'm looking at for that ultimate distribution. My surviving spouse, because I hopefully will leave some money for her. My kids down the line. What will the tax look like? And that's a hard one to project, but what might it look like for those individuals that are actually going to be paying the taxes?
Okay, we've got more to say on this, so I may bring it up here in another hour. If you need the brain trust, you want to talk about Roth conversions, your Roth conversions, rollovers, Social Security, retirement, whatever it is, you can reach any of the advisors, including Professor Rick Plum, at their off-air number at Lucia Capital Group. It's 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. We do have more coming up. Another hour is just ahead of Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.